next case is 9773, Dedeck Grill, Arnold Bog versus Springfield Local School District. Justice Cook has recused herself from this case, and I would please to have sitting in place of Justice Cook, Judge Dana Deffler, Judge of the Court of Appeals, sitting in the 10th District. Welcome, Judge Deffler.
Thank you.
Mr. Miller.
This case presents to the court three different views as to what the law is when the parties are unable to reach a successor agreement as a result of negotiations. In this case, what happened was the employer of the local board of education attempted to have the union agree that put a contract out as a word of transportation versus by the company. The union would not agree. The parties reached impasse, the contract expired, the contract not extended. They went into mediation. After mediation, they still were unable to agree on whether or not the work could be contracted out. About 2 weeks later, the Board of Education adopted a resolution, and it was a contingent resolution, basically said about three or four things. One, it said, if you can reach, it granted the superintendent the power to contract out if they could reach an agreement with the union, or if they could not reach an agreement with the union, then if they satisfied all their obligations under Chapter 4117, all other obligations required by law.
Let me ask you, Mr. Miller, I ask you because it seems that Court of Appeals didn't see the same issue that I think you just said is the issue of the case. This case is important because we need to determine what is the status of the parties, the legal status of the parties, when a collective bargaining agreement has expired, and then there's activity after the agreement. What is that? There's that period of time. And it's not so much whether a board has the right to contract out as it is their legal rights during this period of time after the expiration of the contract. Am I correct in that?
Pretty much, Your Honor. And by the way, I forgot to say that I reserve 4 months for rebuttal. But to directly answer the court's question, the Court of Appeals ignored the issue as to whether or not the old collective bargaining agreement continued in effect. And it also did not decide whether the employer could implement the statute of the final offer. If it read to the statute, construed the statute, said we had no rights under it. As I said, there are three different views as to what the law is in this case. The relator's view and the union's view is very simple. The statute means what it says. And the statute we're referring to is 3319.081. Now, the employer attempted to implement the layoffs under the terms and conditions of the expired collective bargaining agreement. And our view of that is, and we think the evidence is undisputed in this case, that, first of all, the collective bargaining agreement expires by its own terms, which it did on August 31st. Secondly, there is a rule of law that developed, basically the common labor law, which says if you're negotiating for a successor agreement, the terms and conditions of the expired collective bargaining agreement continue to run. We don't quarrel with that argument in this case. What we say to the court is that, and we cited the case in our brief, it's at Young versus Washington Local School District. Young says that at some point where the parties manifest an intention to no longer be bound, then the terms and conditions of the collective bargaining agreement, which is already expired by its own terms, cease. And in this case, we say that power to lay off under the old collective bargaining agreement ceased when we went out on strike on September 14th.
You went out on strike?
Yes, we did.
Is that lawful?
Yes, there's no dispute in this case as to the validity of the strike. It was approved by the union, the Ohio Association of Public School Employees, and it was on for, I think, a total of 4 days.
All the predicate things that have to happen before you go out and occur.
Yes, Your Honor. There was a 10-day notice given as the statute requires, and then the parties did, excuse me, then the employees did pick.
And that's not in dispute.
That is not in dispute. The strike notice is in the record. And there's also a complaint, a verified complaint filed by the school board that's also in the record showing that the strike did take place. The only thing they asked to enjoin was the mass picketing, which is not an issue in this case, not whether or not it was an illegal strike. So that's not an issue here. But the second...
Do you suppose that's the reason the Court of Appeals didn't discuss it?
I think that the Court of Appeals in part missed the issue, and in part, in all fairness to that court, in part, they were relying upon a case that they decided in 1992, the Graham case, which in a prior case involving not a labor union or a strike or anything, but involving this statute, they held, relying on a case that this court decided, the Cutler case. They said that they felt we didn't have any rights under 33-1901 at all.
Well, the reason I press you on it is because I agree with where Justice Pfeiffer just went and putting his finger on this, to me anyway, this entire matter. If the contract was in full force and effect till the end of August, whatever it might be, you gave the 10-day strike notice, you go out and strike on the 14th. The contract then, if that's so, is ended. Now, they take the other position that you hadn't reached an ultimate impasse. But if you're correct, and we find that to be correct, then doesn't that end the issue because you go right to being a statutory contract employee?
Precisely, Your Honor.
All right. So because in propositional law number 3 is as close as you get to it, and I thought maybe you didn't do it in great depth because the Court of Appeals didn't do it in great depth. But you go back on the 17th, you don't go back under the old contract because the contract is terminated. It's your position.
It was our strategy, Your Honor, at that point to take advantage of the protections that the statute gave us. And Section 4117.10a, under the collective bargaining law, says, and this Court's dealt with this issue on 5 or 6 different occasions, it says when there is no collective bargaining agreement in effect, that all of the laws pertaining to the wages, hours, and terms and conditions of employment regulating public employees apply. In other words, once you don't have an agreement, up pops all the old laws. And that's precisely the way that the union and the employees strategized this case, that they were opposed to the privatization that was being undertaken, and they felt that they wanted to remain public employees, and they felt that their best strategy was to take advantage of just what the General Assembly said they could do.
So that if we find there was a contract ended, strike occurred, strike ended, go back as a statutory employee, we don't have to decide any of the other issues about de novo review and all of that, do we?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I would also move to the alternative argument that the employer raises, in which they say they have the right to implement a final offer, and under the final offer, they had the right to contract out the work. And it is our position, should the court reach this issue, that the public employer in Ohio has absolutely no authority to implement final offer. We think we've already decided that in the Roosevelt case, as well as the statute. And again, I go back to 4117.10a. 4117.10a says when there was no agreement in effect, all the laws apply. 41, and in Roosevelt, you said, and correctly so, that you cannot have a forced collective bargaining agreement, that what you have to have is compliance with the statute which requires that the agreement be written, be executed, and be ratified by both sides. And therefore, even though they are standing before you arguing that they have the right to implement a final offer, the law of Ohio is that they don't have to do this. And this is a divergence from the federal law.
How many people are actually involved here?
I think it's about 20 and it's below 26, Your Honor. I can't remember precisely.
And what happened is they laid them all off and then some were rehired by the private contractor.
Almost all of them were. They may not be there now, but at one time, I think almost all of them.
What I'm going to is your request for relief, because in these cases it's always difficult to determine. You're not actually asking for the collective bargaining agreement to be recognized or the certified unit to be recognized. You're asking for reinstatement specifically of these people.
Yes, as public employees.
No.
To their,
Not as public employees, to their job as bus drivers.
To their jobs as bus drivers, with the respondent, which is a public employer, which will make them public employees.
Well, so those that are not there, that are still party plaintiffs, what do we do with that? Are you just asking for back pay, or are they off to some other employment now that it's public employment?
I think that
how do we make them whole? If they don't want to go back and be a bus driver for a private contract.
Well, if they relinquish their right, in other words, if they prevail in this court and the court puts on the writ, the court's writ would just say, you know, reinstated, withhold back pay and benefits and so forth. If they choose at that point not to be reinstated, they would just waive their rights at that point, which I think they have the ability to do.
If we accept your proposition that the union contract, the collective bargaining agreement, terminated by enforcing strike, and they then wanted to recall all the old laws, how would the employer have properly put out a bid for the contract? What should the employer have properly done here?
I would not like to educate the employer on what they could do. I do want to be respectful to the court in attempt to answer its question, however. It is our view of 3319.081 that they cannot terminate our contracts as public employees under that statute once we have a continuing contract. That's our tenure. Now, whether or not they have a separate right to privatize or execute a contract with this management company, you may have two rights that you might have to deal with at some point. That's
so
not.
You're saying basically they could never privatize. Basically, we are headed to that argument.
There is a middle ground, actually, but the point is that whether or not they could are privatized or freely, I don't think it's a concern of the courts. I think the General Assembly made that decision, and I think that's where we look. We look at what the General Assembly said. And under 3319.081, they gave us, after we serve a one-year probationary period and then a two-year probationary period, then we get continuing contracts. The General Assembly said those continuing contracts are our opinion. It's just like a teacher. It's just like a state employee. It's just like...
If the jobs are abolished for whatever reason, they have to support a continuing contract.
That's where we get to what the Court of Appeals did here. And
you made the statement that the state, the resolution abolished all classifications of bus driver and mechanic, but it didn't say that the jobs themselves are abolished. We really come off with that argument. Can you explain how you can abolish a job classification without abolishing the job?
I think the burden is on the employer to explain how you can do just that. They did not abolish the job.
I'd like to know from you, because you made that accusation, so I want to understand what you mean by how you can abolish classification, but that doesn't mean the job is abolished. I need you to tell me how to what you wrote.
I meant precisely what I said, that the abolishment of a classification is not the abolishment of a position. And 3319.081 does not permit an employer, or give any authority to an employer, to abolish a job. And the Court of Appeals in this case said that this authority to abolish a job exists somehow separately from the statute itself. And when we go to the decision of the Ferdinand case, which came out of the 10th District Court of Appeals here, which I might add, the Chief Justice was a member of that panel and agreed that if you look to a reason outside the statute to, for example, abolish the job, the employer then has the burden of proof, not the employee, and the employer must establish reasons that are in the nature of impossibility of performance of a contract before they can take your tenure away. And that's precisely what's at the heart of this case. The tenure rights of these relators versus the right of the employer to take certain actions or to enter into certain contracts. The employer has...
So your basic position, if I understand correctly, is that no matter what you call it, they had no right once you were under the old laws to abolish any job or classification.
I think the Ferdinand case, Your Honor, which I think is good law, says that if they're going to do it, they have to show that there is something in the nature of impossibility of performance. In other words, all of a sudden there's either they have no funds to run the school system, okay, and they can't perform on the contracts. But then they've got the burden to prove it. Now, you've got to keep in mind here...
And cost saving is not a sufficient reason to...
The court is assuming that there is a cost saving, and that...
Let's make that assumption. Let's assume there was a cost saving. I'm not going to...
Okay, cost saving would not be... within the meaning of the Ferdinand case and within the meaning of the statute, cost saving would not be a sufficient reason to eliminate our contract rights. It's got to be in the nature of the impossibility of performance.
I just want to understand what you really meant.
Your Honor, I've got 2 minutes left on my first. You still got 4 minutes for rebuttal.
No.
So I will sit down and say my rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Angelo.
Where did they get permitted the authority of the school board to enter into this privatization agreement?
There are a number of cases and attorneys' general opinion over the years which permits, under statute, a school district in that it must provide transportation under certain circumstances to provide that transportation through the use of private individuals or private companies, I'm sorry.
And yet, doing that, the school board still retains so much control over these positions, et cetera. Providing buses, approving the routes, the place to pick up time, discharge, approving the hiring.
I believe the only control that the school district retains, and it's very little control from a practical standpoint, is that which the statutes require. In this particular matter, the Court of Appeals reviewed this situation in view of the City of Hamilton case and found that there wasn't sufficient control to warrant that these employees were still public employees as opposed to employees of the private contractors. This is a unique situation in that, as part and parcel of the negotiations, the employees were offered positions. The union was extended an opportunity recognized by the private company in order to facilitate a smooth transition in bus service and certainly provide these employees with jobs that were as good or better, perhaps, than they had as public employees.
Well, now, one of these bus drivers, did I read it was $2 an hour or less under the
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think initially when these bus drivers became employees of the private company, that they were paid the same wage, very similar or comparable benefits. They remained in the pension system. One advantage that they did gain because they were a full-time employee is the ability to collect unemployment in the summer, as opposed to a school district employee where they may have been an 8 or 9 month employee with no entitlement to unemployment as a employee of a private company, a full-time employee at that point, which they were laid off in the summer.
Is there anything in this privatization authorization, the statutes that authorize that prevents the school district from negotiating with a private contractor to say these people have certain continuing contract rights under the state law, and we want to transfer those rights so that they will not be employees at will with you. Are you allowed to negotiate something like that, or does that somehow?
I don't believe that the statute for continuing contracts would have any applicability to employees of a private employer. I believe that if this was to be affected, it could be affected in one of two ways, either individual contracts with the employees or in collective bargaining relationship where the private company agrees to perhaps recognize.
But you couldn't stipulate that as one of the conditions when you put this out for bid to.
I suppose you could. I suppose you could.
You don't. I guess you don't even have to bid this. Right?
No.
You just. This guy
determined cost.
The late boss came in and said,
yes,
here's the deal we can give you, and away you go.
That's correct.
So following up on what you've just said, a school board can unilaterally abrogate statutory rights of employees.
I don't believe, Your Honor, that we should characterize it as a unilateral abrogation, certainly.
Well, except that they're a contract employee. Accept that. Would not privatizing then negate, because you just made the point to Justice Pfeiffer, they become employees at will, and they have no statutory rights under the independent contract, even though the statute gives them those rights?
If the positions are abolished, to take the other view, I believe, Your Honor, would be to guarantee a person a job for life.
Okay, well, let's talk about the abolishment in a minute. The one thing I want to get straight in my mind from you is, in response to Justice Pfeiffer, I believe you said the strike was not an illegal strike. If the strike is not an illegal strike, then there can be no collective bargaining agreement in effect, because if there's a collective bargaining agreement in effect, the strike is illegal.
I would agree with some qualification, Your Honor. I would agree that by its terms, the collective bargaining agreement has a date certain for expiration. Typically, if there's not a no-strike provision contained in the agreement, if the agreement has expired by its own terms, then the employees may legally strike. Obviously, if they meet the notice requirements under 4117.
Well, it can't continue on. Can't continue on for some purposes and die for others.
No, it can't. But there's
it's either alive or it's dead.
There's a plethora of case law out there that says, well, the parties are in a bargaining relationship, irrespective of whether the contract has expired by its terms, that the parties must maintain the status quo. That is, I as the employer can't, until we reach this point of ultimate impasse under Van W. Butler, I can't unilaterally make any changes.
Okay, let's move to the abolishment, because there seems to be some confusion about that, and I remember the way we used to do it. Why didn't you just, you're familiar with the term red circle?
Yes, I am.
I would have guessed that. Why weren't these employees just red circles? What happens is, sure, you can abolish the classification. It's semantical whether or not you also abolish the job. Let's assume, like you say, you can abolish the job. When somebody has a vested interest in that job, particularly pursuant to statute, don't you just red circle them until they're gone?
I suppose.
But here you let all those people go.
Well, I'm not sure that I can characterize it as let all those people go, because I think great pains were taken to make sure that these employees were going from one job to another the same level economically where they were.
By the way, we should point out for the record, this is not just bus drivers, this is also mechanics.
Yes, that's correct. In that regard, I think, and it probably even bears itself out more now as we're doing this whole funding and education issue, here was an opportunity.
We've heard about that.
There is an opportunity for a school district to make some very prudent fiscal moves. The projection was that they would save nearly $750,000 by privatizing this transportation function in 5 years. That's not an insignificant amount of tax dollars. And I think those are the considerations. How much can we save at the soonest possible time, yet still provide the same service that we're required to provide by statute, that our constituents require us to provide, and yet still maintain a level of employment for these people who have been our employees.
Well, privatization is such a panacea and a good deal, and particularly in this case, privatization saves $750,000. As you point out, why did the superintendent take such pains to say, but we're going to keep our ability to go back to the service if we need to? I mean, it's obvious, it's a great deal. Why would you want to have a fallback position? Because you know what happens under privatization.
In some circumstances, it won't work. I don't think there's any question about that, but I also believe that the prudence required not paying oneself into a corner in the event that there were some problems. With respect to the issue of the review due this court, in this particular matter, this case was decided by summary judgment, by agreement of the parties at the appellate level. And I think that as a result, this court must give due deference to the determination of the Court of Appeals.
Counsel, if you could help me out on this, if we assume that there was an authorized strike, parties that were at impasse, and the contract expired as we were given date, what is it that blocks, and from your view, what is it that blocks the recognition of the rights of the employees under 3319 in that sequence? There are rights, obviously, for people under 3319.081. But what blocks the consideration of the rights to be accorded these people under that statute in light of that sequence of events?
I think in that particular situation, Your Honor, the parties are, if one assumes that bargaining is ongoing, that there is still some relationship.
Well, bargaining had ended, hadn't it? There was a strike.
Well, that's true, but that doesn't necessarily mean that bargaining had ended. My understanding is that the federal mediator was still involved, and that assumes that there is still some give and take between the parties, be it good or be it bad. During that period of time, the parties must maintain the status quo. There can be no unilateral change. At such time as we reach this point of ultimate impasse, and under Vandalia Butler, the employer becomes free to implement its final offer, then the parties act under that final offer. I would agree, again, based upon your roots composition, that there is no agreement per se. But what there is a set of parameters which the parties have before them by virtue of the exhaustion of the bargaining process, going through those steps which the revised code requires us to do, each party with the ability to exercise their own rights. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Angelo. Mr. Miller, you've saved a little over a minute of your time.
Thank you. Let's make five quick points. Number one, the court was correct in noting that there was a $2 an hour difference. What the employers do when they say that they're going to save money, as they've done in this case, is testify to in a deposition. They had our people go over them at the same wage as we were earning over here, by the way, no increase even though we were in contract negotiations. All new hires come in at $2 an hour less than they have different benefits. So there we have directly competing status in this case, because the obligation or the role of the union is to try to better the working conditions and wages for our members. And they did just the opposite. They're trying to cut it down. It hurts us all over the state, because when they cut wages in one district, it hurts us in another district. It hurts all our people who are already working with minimum wages or near minimum wages. So we're vastly opposed to that. Number two, the court asked whether this would be a unilateral abrogation of our rights if they were to implement the final offer. That's precisely what it would be. If they were to be permitted to implement their final offer, that means that they are repealing all of the statutes, not the General Assembly. The collective bargaining law says that the only time that you can suspend those statutes is when the union and the employer agree to suspend. Here we don't have an agreement, yet they want to implement the final offer to repeal all our statutory rights. So it is a unilateral obligation.
Russell, are you aware of anything that gives the school board from that contract to privatize on the basis that we have existing employees who have a full set of rights under state statutes, so that's part of the deal. You take them subject to different rules than anybody wants.
Sure, and that's a very good observation. I noted it when you were going to address it. That is actually a middle ground that is potentially available.
That's the answer to Justice Stratton's question, I suspect.
And
if he didn't want to get
it. If we have the continuing contracts, our contracts are with the Board of Education. Now, if the board wants to contract out with a private company, there may be a middle ground whereby they can contract with a private company, yet the employer is still the Board of Education. We still have our statutory employment contracts, and somehow they've got to mesh the private companies, wherever they're going to fit into this, with our statutory rights, but they can't get rid of our statutory rights. So there is some middle ground, but it's yet to be worked out. I don't know how it's going to work out.
Okay, they could do that with respect to new hires. Potentially.
And us. The 20-some people that they got rid of. Because we're the ones that have the contracts.
But no, I mean, but they could have bus drivers with continuing contracts working alongside them, private employees, at-will employees who are hired.
Well,
is that possible in the law or not?
I don't know how to speculate on that, Judge. I can't answer.
That's not what you have here, obviously.
But the middle ground, I think, is that the recognition of our contracts, because they already exist.
You've used your time, Mr. Miller.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised for opinion.